Review Board, Herb, there we go. Look forward to hearing your report and having a good discussion this morning. No more preamble than that. Take it away.
Sure.
Yes, please. That's because this ends up getting recorded and broadcast.
Great. So, morning, Commissioners. Good morning. Mr. Mayor, thanks for joining us. My name is Gordon Feiner. I am the interim chair of the PIRB and the public interest advocacy representative. And I appreciate the opportunity to share with you our annual report and our thoughts about the upcoming budgets. So I think first off, I'd like to say that PIRB is divided into three subcommittees. So I sit on the BES subcommittee. Mm-hmm. Tom and Catherine both sit on the water subcommittee. And do we currently have anyone who is on the solid waste subcommittee? Okay, so there are also issues with membership that I think we'd like to talk about with you a little bit later. But I have some thoughts about my service on the BES Budget Advisory Committee as well that I'd like to share with you a bit later. But I think one thing I'd like to start off with is just to talk about our year, what we've accomplished. One of the primary things we've done is educate ourselves on a wide range of topics with the help of the Bureau staff. They've come to us and talked about all sorts of things, including budgeting, how the city balances debt to equity ratios, that sort of thing, individual programs that are put on by the departments, including the Fat Soils and Grease program and that sort of implementation level issue, as well as taking us on a tour of the new reservoir up on Mount Scott, Powell Butte. Thank you. And one of the things we're looking to get accomplished today is essentially clarity for the role of the PIRB moving forward. Considering that that Citizens Utility Board has been brought on as another set of eyes to review budgets, we would like to discuss, and I think we have an idea of what our role should be going forward, but we'd like to kind of get council's view of what that role should be as well, and also the role in light of distinguishing PIRB from the budget advisory committees. So if you've taken a look through our annual report, you'll see that the primary thing that we've focused on here is our input in the budgeting process for the 2013-14 fiscal year. Now, PIRB adopted the recommendations of the BACs for both water, BES, and solid waste, BPS. And appreciate that the mayor's budget aligned with those recommendations as well for the most part. I'd like to commend Mayor Hales for removing most of the non-core costs from the bureau budgets and reassigning those to the appropriate bureaus, whether they be parks or whatever else, wherever those expenditures were more appropriate. That's something that with councils and utility commissioners in the past we've taken issue with and has not been addressed in full, and I think this past year it was addressed more or less completely in full, and
I think in the past we've disagreed with you, whereas this year, the past year, Mayor Hales agreed with you. So it's not that it wasn't addressed, it was that we had a disagreement.
That's a better way to phrase that. I agree.
Can I ask you a question about the rates for the last for our current budget? Do you have any thoughts about the way we do five-year forecasting? And that may be a separate work session, but just conceptually, because as you know, the five-year forecasts tend to be very conservative, and they are sort of the place where we begin the discussion. And for example, last year I think water was scheduled to go up 14%, and so that's before you take into consideration things like the cost of borrowing, PERS savings, changes in the five-year CIP, realignment, operating costs and efficiencies. But we historically have a very conservative number, and I understand there's a reason why the budget team, the budget office, thinks that's appropriate as a starting point. But do you have an opinion as to our five-year forecasts and the rate-making process? And if not, maybe perhaps at some point you could give us some suggestions of any changes you would recommend we make.
I study this. And for those of you who don't know, I teach at PSU, and I really grapple with water and sewer rates going up and what does it mean to the public in general. Sitting on PERB, one of the things that I think has really helped us is the CIP annual report, because we really get a sense of what they're grappling with, why you start very conservatively and then you bring it down, because that's actually the way you do business. It's to me, it's a very, very good business way to do it. However, I think there's a public perception issue that, oh, they've gone high and that's just negotiating, and there is a misunderstanding of the whole process in the public perception. I will also say, and Gordon can chime in, this morning I went on the websites and I can easily find the CIP annual report for Water Bureau. I cannot find it for BES. We're not doing a good job showing how they align together or what the real thinking is. And personally, I find the CIP annual report for the Water Bureau very, very informative on what they're really grappling with and the struggles ahead.
On that point, one of your recommendations
yes.
is that BES publish an annual CIP like the Water Bureau. So I don't want to take the drama out of this, but having thought about this a little bit, I tend to agree with you. So we'll be working with you to make that happen, because I think you've made it clear that the benefit of water publishing that annual CIP, and I think BES should do the same. So I very much appreciate that recommendation. But back to the point you were making about rates, though. You said that there may be the perception that we start with an artificially high number and knock it down. I actually, my sense is we also have another perception out there, which is some people seize on the most conservative number, and they treat that like it's been handed down from Moses by Moses. And, in fact, ignore the fact that that's a starting point and not the end point. So I think they sometimes try to scare people with these five-year forecasts rather than actually getting to the actual numbers that we use. And so there are potentially two problems. On the other hand, there is methodology behind the conservative assumptions they make. So perhaps we could spend some time at a subsequent meeting talking to our friends at OMF and the budget office about the assumptions they're making, and see whether there's a different way, or maybe more than one way, that we can present the information to the public.
I'm trainable, but it takes a while. That whole issue of public perception and water rates, or water and sewer, yeah, they're going up around the country. They're not going to go down anytime soon. And I shared with Ryan and others Michigan State University study from the Institute of Public Utilities, and I can share it with all of you, on water and sewer rates based on the CIP.
CPI.
Thank you. See, he's my reality check. And every water utility I've looked at in the country is grappling with this issue of public perception. Hi, guys. They're not going to go down. And they're a little bit higher than CPI. And there are reasons for that. For instance, the cost of pipe is more than doubled. China is literally just, the cost of steel is going up because the amount that China is using right now, for instance. That's a simplification. But there's some basic fundamentals. We have aging infrastructure. we're not getting that message out to the public. And that's something that I'm pretty passionate about, as Nick knows, because I teach this. And the students go, well, that makes absolute sense. Of course we have to look at our aging infrastructure. We have regulations, some of which are going to come in maybe from left field that we don't know about. The whole cryptosporidium thing wasn't on anyone's radar, and all of a sudden it's there. It has to be. It has to be seen from public health. So how do we tell this really complex story to the public? Because those who know that...
No, not everybody has the benefit of being, you know, a scholar of this as you are. So we would welcome suggestions. I tell you, as the new guy in charge, I'm constantly amazed at the level of misinformation. So, for example, three of the best kept secrets that I keep sharing with groups, including business groups and ratepayer groups, residential ratepayers, is that when they get their quarterly water bill, a third of the bill is water, two-thirds is sewer stormwater. I can't tell you how many people are surprised to hear that, because there's been sort of a merging in the media, particularly, that's all water. Number two, that for the typical residential customer, they've paid about $27 a month, roughly, for 3 years in a row. Now, that's also a well-kept secret. Now, that's partly because of conservation. But the bill has stayed pretty steady, and that counters the narrative of skyrocketing, you know, costs to residential consumers. The third thing that I think is interesting is that we've not done a good enough job explaining the connection between capital investments and rates. So, for example, when sometimes people complain about, you know, the rising costs of sewer and stormwater, if I point out that part of that's a result of the big pipe, a $1.2 billion project, it's like, oh. Now, the big pipe was very popular, and it came in on time and under budget. So, you know, I think one of the things I've learned in a short period of time is that we need to do a better job telling the facts and the story. That doesn't mean people aren't going to be critical of things that we do or have a view that we might do it differently. But I think there's a lot of confusion, and I hope, actually, in the next couple years, we can give the public the basic information, not some of the propaganda, but the basic information, and they can, armed with that information, help us make wise decisions about how we spend ratepayer dollars.
And I think you put your finger on the basic frustration of PIRB and the BACs. These are volunteers, all of us, who really learn this and who understand the issues, and then we're tarred with just being toadies of the system somehow. We're not. We're actually extraordinarily informed citizens. We've gone through this. We've asked a lot of questions. But then it sits there without any real community outreach. And PIRB can't do all of that community outreach, for instance. I would also make one recommendation that makes all the difference I've found. Don't talk about percent increase. Talk about dollars. People can't do percents. They look at 7%. They go, oh, my God, I can't afford that. And it's 3 cents or something. And so I highly recommend we change from percent to dollars. And to show, again, and PIRB definitely commends the Water Bureau in particular, changing the billing to monthly with your leadership, Nick, because it's going to make a big difference on public perception of what they're really paying for. So if you talk about dollars and not percent increase, and then you talk about, you know, oh, BES's percent is less than Waters. Well, Waters is actually dollar less than BES's, because BES's share is so much higher. So how do we change that perception of that? I mean, I think, I don't mean to speak for both of you, but basically we've found that these bureaus are doing an amazing job of really protecting public health. Yeah, they could probably do better, but they spend an awful lot of time reacting to negative press, and that doesn't help us either. You guys want to add anything to that?
Your recommendations,
Sure. One thing at the end here, and this was, it may not be a situation that... Yes, sir. Gordon Feiner. So a recommendation we made at the end here is in reaction to the sale of the Freeman Tank property parcel in Southwest Portland, that there was a lot of negative neighborhood reaction towards. So we made a recommendation towards improving the process for sale of surplus parcels owned by utility bureaus to improve the transparency involved in that process. First off, inquire with other city bureaus to make sure that no other bureau is interested in acquiring the property. There was some question as to whether the Parks Bureau would have liked to acquire.
No, actually, we were notified and we didn't. The Parks didn't want it. That part is already done. The rest of your recommendation.
Okay, excellent. And the rest is more publicly available notices for available surplus property and notice of intent to dispose of property, et cetera. I don't know if this is a situation that will recur in the future, but we hope you take.
So, Gordon, let me just say we really appreciate your thoughtful recommendations. They have been incorporated into a draft policy that we have circulated for comment. And while I'm in the enviable position of being threatened by lawsuits by both sides in this, and may end up have proposed we go to mediation to let a mediator sort it out, or else we can let the lawyers get rich. And even though I've been advised by the city attorney's office that the strictly speaking the city followed its policy, I agree with you that the policy is woefully lacking, and. So we have incorporated your suggestions and added a little more. These new, as we're discussing these citywide, I have directed my bureaus to put them into place now. And remember, we now have surplus property at the Water Bureau and the Bureau of Environmental Services, which we've been directed to dispose of. For example, some property that was acquired in connection with Big Pipe that now we're going to turn around and sell. And we ought to sell it. And we ought to hopefully get the best price possible and then use it to stabilize rates. But the existing policies were lacking. And with your good suggestions and other feedback we've received, we will have a much more robust, transparent, and I think rational system. So I really appreciate your feedback on this.
Thank you. I believe the other recommendations I'll get back to the budgeting process, and I think I should let Catherine or Tom speak to the recommendations regarding the Water Bureau budget. Pages 2 and 3.
I have to remember what
we
said.
It's a while ago.
We did extraordinary due diligence last year with the BACs and PERB of really going through the Water Bureau. We do know that there were some non-core issues that really the Water Bureau is very honest in saying these really aren't core services. They should be taken off the budget. And watching that whole process of how do you take things off the budget and how do you make those decisions, I think that the BACs and PERB helped the Water Bureau do that. So I'm trying to give you a sense of we really are helping you. We're not just sort of in a vacuum there. I think the understanding the billing process and monthly billing brought a lot more visibility to that issue of saying, we really do need some way to get monthly billing because quarterly bills are very, very hard for people. But we also need more transparency on what's really on the bill and that you're paying for two services, actually three or four, Stormwater and Superfund too. So I think
that's an excellent point. I can't tell you how many customers I've talked to who weren't really clear that it's a combined water, sewer, stormwater bill. And I think the way the information is laid out has led to some of that confusion. So the bill is not only being redesigned, but our customers will have the option to go monthly. And to my new colleagues, one of the impediments to going to the kind of monthly system that I think we'd all like to see is the cost of replacing meters. I believe that we were told at one point it cost about $50 million to have new meters that could be read remotely. So faced with that cost barrier and technology challenge, what we're doing is just using some old-fashioned technology, which is we're averaging out people's bills and then billing them monthly with an agreement that at the end of the year we'll do a catch-up. If you've overpaid, you'll get a credit. If you've underpaid, you'll get a bill. But that way, for people that want to budget monthly and see monthly, and by the way, I just got my quarterly bill, and my water charge came in well below $27, which I told you was the sort of typical customer. So I want to just give you some free advice. If you want to bring your water bill down, you can do like my wife and I've done, which is when our washing machine broke, we don't use it anymore. We go to the we go to Hollywood to the laundromat, and it turns out it's actually it uses a lot of water, and there's been a drop in our water bill as a result.
And you have teenagers at home. That's a remarkable feat.
We got two kids at home, so now the Hollywood laundromat's making a fortune off of us, but our water bill is. Our water bill has come down.
And that's a good thing?
It is.
Okay, well, but that, do you know, you've just segued into the conservation rate study because the Water Bureau did quite an extensive study on should we have tiered rates, what works best, how do you make sure people are conserving what they really need to do. But they're also up against the whole issue that's counterintuitive, which is this is a fixed cost system. If we conserve a whole lot, if everyone's going to laundromats instead, well, laundromats will be paying more, I guess, so that balances out. But if people really conserve, like in this pending drought year we're looking at, the Water Bureau may have to increase rates. And this is counterintuitive. So people do not understand the fixed cost system. They don't understand the delivery system, what's under the streets, that really you're paying for the pipes and the whole delivery system. It doesn't magically arrive from Bull Run to your tap. And so no matter what the volume of the water.
There's a gremlin there somewhere.
Well, and I just want to highlight, I think nothing is more important for this council to focus on the next 2 or 3 years than how we grow our wholesale customer base. Because as you've pointed out, we're a fixed cost system. And so if we can convince our suburban customers to use more water or expand our customer base, then it will help stabilize our rates. And one of the headwinds we're going to run into is some people are talking about they'd rather own than rent. And I think we have to do a better job explaining the benefits of renting a system that accesses the best quality water in the world and why that is long-term better for them than spending a fortune to invest in systems that allow them to draw water from rivers, which, by the way, are going to be subject to increasing regulations going forward. And may end up being really a dumb investment long term, particularly when you've got 19 billion gallons of pristine water up in the Bull Run watershed waiting to be tapped.
All you have to do is look at what happened in West Virginia to know there's going to be a whole lot more regulations in water. I mean, that was a chemical spill that went into the river that basically was the intake for 300,000 people. Bull Run didn't have that. That's rare and never will. That's very rare in the world. So you're going to see, I think, more regulations than fewer regulations. So your point about the wholesale customers and trying to sort of figure out how do we work effectively, I think the whole fluoride decision hurt that. And that was one of our recommendations, is that we didn't think about the impact on wholesale customers of a decision that was made for the whole system, that they would then be taking fluoridated water. Now, some of them already fluoridate, but they would have to manage their fluoridation process because the water would have been fluoridated. So one of the things that I've heard from wholesale customers, and I think we might even in PIRB have a discussion with a wholesale customer so we can understand their points of view, is they have no say in the water quality. They really don't. They have no say on what's built. So that's one of their frustrations too. So how do you, you know, they're not co-owners, so it's quite a dilemma.
Thoughts about how to ameliorate that?
Keep talking. Basically, keep talking. I think a lot of these new.
We should probably do a specific briefing on that because it's technically not true. They have no say because. We do have agreements that allocate costs in certain ways, and that's an indirect way of it's not actually a say, but it again allocates costs in a particular formula. But to your point, we are spending a lot more time FaceTime with our wholesale customers, engaging them, and we're spending more time with our large water user customers, and we're learning valuable things. For example, Mayor, when we sat down with the Widmer brothers and asked, because they're a very large user, their principal concern around water had to do with when we shift from Bull Run to well water. And it has a slight change in pH or something which potentially affects the taste. So their concern is to get earlier notice because they have systems that they kick in to regulate water. Well, that's good. That's an example of more robust communication. And they didn't previously have a dedicated customer service person. So I designated a designated customer service person by the name of David Schaff. So when the Widmer brothers, who are a very important customer, have an issue, they can just call the director and they get immediate attention. So those are part of the things we're trying to do differently.
I test. Let's give that to Amanda. Okay. We don't have the same level of discussions in PIRB with BES than we do with water. We don't understand the depths of their issues quite as much. And Gordon, you've sat on the BAC for them. So I'm turning that over.
Sure, I have, however, and I wish either John or Charlie were here because they have served on both the Water Bureau and the BES budget advisory committees, and so they have a basis for comparison that I don't. My understanding in discussions with them is that Water Bureau provides considerably more information up front. I believe, a greater totality of information, whereas BES kind of lays out, here are large projects, here are our cuts and adds, and the process tends to revolve around the edges of the budget as, in terms of what programs are being considered to add, what programs are being considered to be dropped. And that's not necessarily a way to get at the meat of the budget. It will dictate, you know, whether the increase is 4% instead of 5%, that sort of thing, but it's not as deep of a dive. Now, on the other hand, there is a limited amount of time involved a limited amount of time that BAC members can allocate to investigating the budgets. I mean, we're volunteers and have other things going on in our lives. And I think that this segues into the upcoming involvement of CUB. Now, I used to work for CUB, so I understand the level of detail that that organization gets into to budgets with, and having another set of eyes that is able to take a deep dive, that has access to bureau staff, that has the time and resources to develop to asking the tough questions about those budgets, I think is going to be a vast improvement. And I think that the issue that the BAC has tended to have with BES will likely go away, given that they're and I will say it has been improving over the years. Each successive year I've been on the BAC, we've gotten more information in the in an earlier time frame as well. But the I think having CUB involved probably also in the BAC process as an additional voice that has and an independent voice at that that has been able to review the budget is going to be helpful for BAC members as well. That said, do we want to go into our discussion of our role in light of adding CUB?
Good segue.
Okay.
Thoughts about that? Yeah. All sort of the whole trifecta of what do you see the role of CURB, CUB, and the
BAC. That's what we're here to ask.
Yeah.
Also, just by way of framing this, we're anticipating a City Club report in the next month or two, and they have informed us that they'll be making recommendations about some structural changes about how we do rate making. I anticipate that there are some other groups locally looking at this question that may have some thoughts. So I think we're at the beginning part of that conversation, and if you want to salt your thoughts now, I think we're going to have a broader focused discussion on that when we get the benefit of all these different perspectives.
Catherine Howells, see, I remembered. Full disclosure, I'm on the City Club Research Committee for that report. It's been fun. CUB versus PERB. So I guess I'll just bluntly say when this announcement came out, I think basically PERB members said, so what's our role? You have now undercut our recruitment. And it was a reaction. And now we're trying to say, okay, we still, because we're part of the city, under city charter, we do have a role, but we need your help. Basically letting people know that this is a robust role or we won't be able to recruit people. That's putting it very bluntly. But I think it's what we're interested in doing is getting people who are pretty informed citizens already, you know, from engineering firms, whatever sort of thing, that already know the lay of the land of public utilities, or at least water and sewer, whether they're public or not. So we don't have, and this is what I've seen in the BAC this year, is it's an extraordinarily steep learning curve, as you all know. And trying to mitigate that learning curve every year or every few years in PERB recruitment or even BAC recruitment really brings a more robust view of the issues and a more informed view of the issues. So we're looking at how to do outreach differently, not just through neighborhood associations and finding people who might be interested, but finding people who also are somewhere along the learning curve already. And economists would be nice, accountants would be nice, you know, people who really know how to run the numbers. I'm not good at that part of it. And so we balance our participation in our knowledge, and I think it would make us much more robust.
Finally, I'll talk. We'll get it on. Okay, so Tom Badrick, East Portland rep. It's been kind of a, Catherine and I have spent a lot of time talking about recruiting and where to find people, and, you know, I come from the neighborhood association system, and I think we all know that there is a finite pool of resources there, and there are 2,000 organizations and meetings you can belong to, so maybe looking outside of that structure is a way to reach out to people. The other thing that I'm sure my fellow PERB members are tired of hearing me talk about is adding a little more diversity to the PERB. And granted, we're 9 people or 9 positions, but it's never been a particularly diverse group of people compared to the whole city population. So I think that would be a perspective that we could add on and build on.
And just to bring you up to speed on the situation regarding our membership, it is rather dire. I am interim chair, and my term will be expiring in July. Our previous chair had her term expire in December, so we are down to 4 slots filled out of 9, so we don't even have a quorum if we need to vote on something. We have a couple of members who have agreed to remain on in an interim basis simply to provide a quorum if we do need to vote on something important, but it would be very helpful to receive some support from City Council members in terms of recruiting new members to our board.
And just to clarify, my understanding is that any member of council can can nominate. So I've been involved in that in the past. Be happy to do that again. I'll put the link on my website.
And Catherine Howells, and just to clarify, Tom and mine's terms ended in December. We haven't been reappointed. So it's up to you guys if you want to reappoint us or not. I recommend it, but. So we've been grappling with this on how do we do the outreach, and then the Cub announcement came and it say, okay, how do we do the messaging? So Tom and I have been working on what's the messaging for PERB, and we could really use your feedback on what you think would be appropriate messaging for PERB today if possible.
A little longer than that, especially yeah. In some of the other discussions.
We had a discussion with Cub in the last PERB meeting, and they see themselves being sort of, they'll have one full-time person, and they will also be an asset to PERB, which is good. I mean, having one more outside voice. So why weren't they a member of PERB? So it's a little awkward. We'll figure it out and how it works. I think part of what we need with recruitment is literally the messaging the City Council finds is valuable. Valuable.
Sorry.
And that we are part of the city charter. We have charter obligations. And what else do you want to add?
Apparently I fail at that button. Tom Badrick again. One of the things that I kind of went through, the stages of grief kind of experience when the Cub announcement came out, and it was, and I want to be really clear, I think adding Cub to the picture is a very good thing. It's a very positive thing. It was just how the message came out, and as a volunteer, I suddenly felt like I was not valued and useful. And because I represent the residential users, and the message was that the Cub is going to reach out to the residential users. And so I kind of spent about 3 weeks thinking through this, and what's my purpose, and why am I there, and why am I spending my valuable personal time doing this. And at the end of it all, I come to the realization that as a PERB, we have not done, let's be blunt, we have not done a good job at all of outreach. Part of it, we can ask you to support us, but part of it is that we need to be out there and visible and let people know we're there, and we haven't done that. So it's not somebody else's fault. Part of it is that we need to get out there and do that too. And some of that is as we work on our message and our recruitment doing that. But it really does validate us as an organization if City Council says this is an important group. And I don't think you need to call a press release and hold some event and say we value the PERB, but in every message, you can say BAC, you can say the budget process, but it doesn't hurt to just add those 4 little letters in each message, because the BAC and the Cub and the PERB will all have overlapping but distinct roles. And we could, I think that would be another whole long discussion about what the overlapping roles is rather than do it today. But I mean, there are distinct roles that each of us play. And so just making sure that in the public communication that the message is all of these roles are important, not just one.
Just wanted to make a peanut gallery comment that,
the Cub folks, I mean, they're wonks, and as you said, they're going to have, you know, professional staff delving deep into the numbers. I think that there's always a huge value to having a volunteer group that reminds people to phrase information in ways that regular people who aren't, you know, involved in something full-time can understand, and making sure that you have the information on the website in a, you know, accessible way. Because, I mean, I don't, Cub is a highly professional organization. I mean, but you know, Bob, I mean, and I haven't looked at their website recently to see how, you know, they break down information on the private utilities. But I think that having a group of volunteers saying, hey, you need to express things in ways that regular folks without lots of time on their hands can understand is always going to be hugely valuable.
We got some positive feedback from the CIP presentation we did last fall. I believe it was the first time water and sewer came together with the same format. So the same PowerPoints, apples to apples. And we're still refining that, but that's part of what Commissioner Novick is getting at, is presenting this information in a way that's clearer and easier to understand, and presenting both utilities as if they were, in effect, under one roof. Because after all, it's one check people write, so they want to understand how they both operate. But they may not be married, but they're certainly dating, so we ought to present the information in a little more coherent way. Your thoughts of how we can continue to do a better job, particularly visually, particularly telling the good news. Something you said earlier, Catherine, really struck with me. I almost feel like in the last 6 months, one of the things I've learned is that some of the best kept secrets about our utilities are things that the public really has a right to know and needs to know. And it's very hard to have a discussion about these issues without baseline information. And I think we have to do a better job providing that to them. When we talk about the Water Bureau having a AAA credit rating, that's just not a detail in a report. That says something about how we stack up with our peers. It says something about the management of the Bureau. When we talk about typical customers and what they pay in actual dollars, not percentages, to your point, that tells a different story than you sometimes hear. And you talk about the Bull Run watershed and what it means to have 19 million gallons of pristine water. We can anticipate the next 100 years, the wars around the globe that we fought will be about water. And here we have this magnificent supply backed up by well water. And there's a whole host of things. I just think we can do a much better job presenting to the public, explaining, and then giving them a real clear sense of what the choices are and the trade-offs. If you cut operating costs, what's the implication? If you postpone some capital spending, would it matter whether you live on the east side or the west side? Would you have a different view of that, particularly when we get to resilience and the resilience of our pipes? Our hope is that Cub will help facilitate that debate, because they will be doing outreach where they facilitate contacts with ratepayers. And Mayor, I think during the budget process, we have a chance to come up with at least a single forum somewhere along the line where we provide some basic information about our utilities and give people a chance to offer perspectives, and then have staff available to actually respond, so that we have an interactive process and hopefully raise the level of public awareness about the basic facts and the choices that are in front of us.
That segues into my next rant, Catherine Howells, by the way. It's not a rant, really. Yeah, I know. Long-term policy. Really looking not just 5 years, but where do we want to be 30 years from now? And my sense is that needs to come from you. What do we want to do for resilience? What do we want to do for rates versus resilience? What do we want to do with water quality and sort of maintaining the public health of the whole system? Here's one that I love that's way below the radar, and that's the drainage districts and levees and BES's part in that. That's going to get real expensive real fast, and that one worries me. Really worries me. really, really worries me.
Found out yesterday that actually more of that responsibility lies with the city than was originally understood, and less with the drainage district or the county or anyone else. So congratulations. We own a big piece of that problem.
Let people know that. That's going to have an impact on rates then, probably. So again, it's that long-term strategic thinking over time, knowing that water and sewer rates are not going to go down, knowing that there's aging infrastructure. You know, people will compare. I love comparisons of water rates because it's never apples to apples. It depends on the age of the system. It depends on how many people are literally sucking off the pipes. New York City's rates can be lower because there are more people sucking off the pipes, as I like to say. But it really depends a lot on the age of the system. So like on the west side, Tualatin Valley Water District right now, they have pipes from the 70s. They don't have the same issues that we do. We don't. So to talk in terms of resilience and aging infrastructure, to give people a sense of how old some of this infrastructure is and what the challenges are, would really help tell the story. And I think telling that story is part of that customer outreach. And that leads me to a question of what's non-core? Is community outreach non-core? The bureaus have great stories to tell, but they don't have the budget to tell them. And that would help us a whole lot if there was some budget to tell these stories. I go around telling the stories and showing the old photos and all, but I really think we need to look at what's non-core and what really helps us long-term. I don't have an answer to it. I mean, there has to be a cap, obviously, on it. But there's got to be more the story of where we really are in our basic utilities. And at PSU, I'm housed in urban planning. And they don't really pay attention to core infrastructure. And it makes me very, very nervous because the core infrastructure is what keeps our cities healthy. And we're not paying attention to the real issues that are being talked about within the industry. So I think city council could help in framing that and saying our core infrastructure is vital to the health of the city, the economic, the public health of the city, et cetera.
You know, as I was thinking about your comment, we tried something new recently when we went to an editorial board meeting, which is we randomly chose someone on the editorial board and figured out where they lived and then mapped how we got water to their house and how we discharged the waste from their house. And it's an incredibly complicated thing. And you know, we sort of take it for granted, right? If there's a fire, we expect that the fire... That there'll be water and a fire hydrant that functions. If you turn on the tap in your kitchen, you expect water to come out. We take it for granted. But it was fascinating showing someone, and the person we chose deliberately lived on the west side. So it was extra complicated to get the water there, having to cross the river and then be pumped. And I think when we were finished, there was a sort of grudging admiration for the complexity of this enterprise of delivering the water. But you know, some of our infrastructure, as we like to say, is 100-year-old pipes on a 400-year replacement schedule. So we have to explain to people the cost of maintaining that system. One thing about long-term policy, can I make a suggestion for you to ponder about an issue for next year? You've challenged us to think long-term. I think that's very appropriate. One of the biggest variables in any kind of long-term planning is what Congress does. And there are some things on the horizon that are really important. Continued mandates without federal funding. The mayor had the nerve recently to propose that we put the fund back in Superfund. But I mean, it would be nice if when we have these requirements, there was actually money, or at least let's change it. Let's rebrand it, because Superfund is a bit of a misnomer. There's no fund. It's a super reg. There are other, you mentioned the levees and the sort of, you know, Katrina effect. Well, we may be in the worst case situation where some regs come down that basically literally bankrupt our levy districts, and by default, the city ends up being is on the hook. But another area I would add to your list is tax reform. Something that keeps Commissioner Novick and me both up is because we rely so, between transportation, water, and sewer, we rely so heavily on debt to finance large-scale capital improvements, is that the thinking, the ideas that are floating around to change the rules around municipal finance. And if, as part of some kind of deficit reduction package, our friends in Washington change those ground rules, for the net effect, whatever you think of this exercise, the net effect will be to drive up the cost of borrowing, which means it will be more expensive at a time when we're not getting adequate resources from Washington to cover these obligations. So that may be a perfect storm for us on the horizon, and this may be an area that you, as part of the long-term view, you may want to weigh in on, get a briefing from our Office of Legislative Affairs, and give us your thoughts on some of these issues, because they may end up being some of the most impactful issues that we deal with over the next 10 years.
So how can we all help each other with this community outreach and the stories that should be told?
It's a challenge for us as a city in general to get the word out, whether it's the comp plan or how the costs are driven in these two bureaus.
Mayor, what would you think? This is just off the cuff, but just conceptually, to us holding at least one rate hearing in the nature of a public forum,
right,
doing it here, mm-hmm. Amanda's looking at me, so I opened, but the reason I was saying here is wherever we do it, doing it at a place where we could have lots of staff people present to respond the way we do when we take up legislation, and give the PERB an opportunity to make a presentation,
right,
frame the choices, have a handout that actually talked about some of the choices, and then took a lot of testimony, but instead of the way we do often our budget hearings where we have marathon testimony and we are reluctant to engage people because we want to give everyone a chance to speak, structure it so that periodically we bring up folks to provide responses, mm-hmm, and get answers to questions and to help frame our consideration.
Yeah, I like that. That's good.
And I think doing it separate from the other budget items means that we can be a little more focused on the utilities.
I like that suggestion. I do think it would be helpful to have it not here.
Okay.
We're kind of central here, but actually the Kelly Building, which doesn't have an auditorium, that's about the most central part of the city. Over at 47th and Burnside, but both the Human Rights Commission and the Citizen Review Committee of the Independent Police Review Board have found a lot of interest in them taking their meetings to different places in the community or holding forums on a particular topic. I guess few people would. I know you do get some folks who come and observe your meetings, but having a focused maybe in addition to the rate discussion, something that the PERB might put on. I'm sure the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and the Office of Equity would assist in publicizing, but indeed your staff person also could help with that. So I think there are opportunities for you both to recruit new members and to explain to folks what you do and to get, people are very interested in the rates. And I agree with you, Commissioner Fish, that laying them out, that this capital improvement project presentations that you made last year and that are now available online, much easier to understand than anything I've ever seen before in terms of the rate bureau. So there's a lot of opportunities, and I'd be happy to engage in helping to plan those things.
Good suggestion.
And I won't speak for Tom and Gordon, Catherine Howells again. I like that idea because it's like PERB could go out and say, we're going to have a public discussion on resilience or aging infrastructure. So it's not getting into the nitty-gritty of the budget cycle, because that's really most people won't come to that, or you'll just end up getting in a fight. But if you have a discussion, for instance, about what does it mean to think in terms of resilience, or what does it mean for instance, the drainage districts, and this is something we're working on, or what does it mean to have, municipal bonds being changed? What does that sort of thing really mean to the public? That would be very good education, I think, and I think PERB could think about how.
I'll tell you what it'll mean in the short term. I feel sorry for cities like Atlanta and other peer cities that are just beginning to deal with their CSO problems. Cities across the country are going to have to deal with this problem of keeping sewage out of their rivers, but they will be embarking on long-term, very costly programs at a time when we're going to see pressures on interest rates. And we'll look back on the golden age in which we did our work, where interest rates were at historically low levels.
Seattle's looking at it right now.
Couple of comments. One, Catherine, I really appreciate your repeatedly talking about resilience. And I'm kind of kicking myself because 2 days ago was the anniversary of the last Cascadia subduction zone earthquake. And I had a couple of thoughts about things that we could do that would sort of mark that anniversary that didn't pan out. I'm thinking that this next year, one thing we could do is sort of plan on that way in advance. And one thing we could do is have a public forum where you and other people who've been thinking about issues that relate to resilience, you know, talk about what we should be thinking about in terms of the utility infrastructure. So let's mark January 26th on our calendars for next year and think about doing that. I also just have to say that in terms of getting attention to your work, and I don't know if you'll be comfortable with what I'm about to say, but there is this campaign going on now, and there's this ballot measure, the premise of which is that if we just get a group of volunteer politicians together, they will find all sorts of waste in the water and sewer bureaus and drastically reduce rates. And actually, we have a well-informed group of volunteers that have been looking at the water and sewer systems, namely you. And one question that I'm inclined to start asking the media to explore is, why do the proponents of the measure think that they're going to find people so much more informed and intelligent than you are? And maybe sending the media to you to sort of ask, why you have not come to the conclusion that there's all sorts of rampant waste, fraud, and abuse that, if eliminated, could result in drastic reductions in rates.
By the way, Commissioner Novick, we better hope they can find people that are more informed than this group, because under the proposed charter change, these folks would be disqualified for running for those positions under the so-called conflict of interest rules.
Go ahead. Does the proposed charter change do away with the PERB?
Per se, I don't think so. But the number of people who would be disqualified from having anything to do with oversight is pretty shocking. Have you ever worked here? Have you ever volunteered here? Have you ever paid attention? You're out of the pool, and good luck with the rest. So I don't think it specifically addresses the PERB at all. I don't believe it does.
I won't speak for Gordon and Tom, but I'm more than willing to do that. However, because it's an initiative and we are appointed by City Council, there is a legal question on whether we are allowed to talk about the initiative once it's on the ballot.
We'll get a verification of that, but you're volunteer citizens and you don't give up your citizenship by...
So as individual citizens,
in fact,
we could.
In fact, city employees can't campaign for or against a ballot measure, but we as elected officials are free to speak out about it, and we are. And you as citizens have given up not one particle of your citizenship by serving on an advisory committee to the city, in my opinion. But we'll get that verified. But I don't think you are any way.
Because we were told in the fluoride debate we could not take a position.
As a PERB, maybe
as
not.
As a PERB, but as individuals.
As a body of the city, I don't believe that any of our, we like the Planning Commission taking a position on a land use issue. I don't think our advisory committees can do that.
We've received guidance on what our offices can't and can't do. This is a good question that we'll get some clarification. But I just want to say to Mr. Braddock, I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but under the proposed charter, you actually have two challenges. One is from East Portland. You cannot run to serve on this body